Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Mandy Bass of Free Speaker Bureau, and we have Ellen O'Neill Little here today as a very special guest. Ellen has been very successful in building her business coaching practice using speaking opportunities. She offers marketing solutions to help her clients build their business. And so Ellen is going to share some of her secrets with us today. So Ellen, when did you know that you wanted to use speaking opportunities to grow your practice?
Actually, and thank you, by the way, so much for having me on the show today. This is fantastic. Actually, what happened, I was a store manager early in my career for one of the big box retailers. And I realized that I had a knack for getting people motivated. And at that point, I probably was 22 or 23 years old. And I realized that I had a gift of getting a message across to people in such a way that made them motivated to take action. And that's really what I think I grew up that way. I don't know at what point that it was ever a thought that I wasn't going to be a speaker or wasn't going to be in the public light in some way. I just didn't know what my audience was going to be. So with using speaking in general, it was more of a launch for me that launched what I needed to do for the rest of my business. So when I was going out and talking to people about what my thoughts, my practices, my operational ideas of how to correct businesses, of how to help people find their own way in their jobs or in their careers, or, you know, executives that needed to change careers from one to another, the speaking piece really was my start with getting them to know me and to know who I was. Because I have a very, as you'll see through the interview, I have a very casual speaking style because I like people to understand me and can connect with me in such a way that in most of my speaking engagements afterward, I would always have a tough time up at the stage because I would have so many people coming up and managing that group of people that were there. So I would always have an assistant and they would just start making appointments. So it really became... speaking became my way of marketing myself and also getting people to know me on a large scale.
So tell me a little bit about when you started out, what kinds of topics did you speak about that created such a fantastic response for you?
Ironically, I would start feeling things in my own business. So like I said, I worked for a big box retailer for many, many years. And as I grew with that career, I realized some of the challenges, HR challenges, again, succession planning challenges, where do I go from here type of things where people really had great skills, talents, and abilities, but didn't know how to use them. So I started coming up with ideas of how to correct those things. And I would put them in a speaking format so that I would be able to deliver this information on what they needed to do. And in every one of my speaking engagements, I would not only have the content, but then I would have like a little workshop afterward that would teach them how to get started. And so it really, the success came from me just paying attention to what was going on around me and going on with my friends, with the other career professionals that I had associated myself with, and realized that, wow, there's a lot of topics that are out there. And I want to skip a little bit over to like the free speaking pieces, because I was really intimidated, I had to say, in the early days, because I was, you know, I was probably 28 or 29 years old. And I had these people that were getting a hold of me because of my influence with this big box retailer, which I don't want to necessarily say names, but this retailer had 26 other companies. And that's where the Fortune 500 companies came in, where they were all taking me from the place that I was employed and asking me to go deliver material to these other companies. And with my employer's approval, I was able to start writing material for them. And, you know, names like Chick-fil-A, I mean, we weren't necessarily associated with them, but they had heard about our learning department and had heard about me just because of different things that we had been doing in Atlanta. and had asked us to come in as a team, but they wanted me to deliver the material. So it was really nice, but I was scared because I really didn't know what I was doing. Or at least I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing at the time. So what would happen is that I would put these things, these programs together, and then I would find some philanthropic group or some organization that was local, and I would go test everything out on them.
Oh, that's great. So that, I mean, that's one of the things that we recommend, especially for people who are just getting started. And also if you're a seasoned speaker and you want to try out new material, that's a great thing to do. So what kind of groups did you do that with?
American Business Women's Association was a great one, especially mm-hmm. if the topics were female focused or, you know, female career focused, those types of things, or anything that had to do with the internet. It seemed like that was that pocket. And then the other types of classes that I would give about branding or identifying who you are or interviewing or any of those, I would do at like a Career Source. We have Career Source, and I know it's a national brand now. So every community or every municipality has some type of a job link or a Career Source or some, some such organization like that. And I tell you that my thought process with that was that some of those people were so chronically depressed or chronically unhappy that I felt like if I could make a difference in their life, that this material was really good.
Wow. That's fantastic.
As soon as you start seeing those changes, or you have people that are following up, or they get their job of a lifetime, the one that they've been pining for forever, and then they finally get it because of some influence that you had on their life, there is no payment for that.
I agree. Whenever I get an email, and I still get emails from people who, you know, I haven't seen in 10, 15 years thanking me for the effect I've had on their lives. And it's just such a wonderful thing. It makes it worth it. Like, you, no matter what you've been through, you go, this is worth it. Right. It's a fantastic thing. So tell me how you went from there, from working with the big box retailer and doing the Fortune 500 companies, how you went from there to business coaching, and how you then used that experience of speaking to help you build your business coaching practice.
So the transition came in 2006, and I decided that I just couldn't travel anymore. I was on the road for almost 7 years, and I'm traveling all over the United States. And I said, my family, everything was suffering at that point. And I said, I just needed to take a break. So I had applied a few places looking for that 40-hour a week job that everybody always talked about, because I never had one of those. That was like an 8 to 5 and you had weekends off. And I looked at it more as taking a break. And actually what it turned into is probably one of the biggest launch parties that I could have ever experienced. And it was a real estate company, a nationally known real estate company, and they had hired me as a productivity coach. And in that, with the productivity coaching, this particular brokerage went from 40 associates in the within that umbrella to over 120, and it was because of the classes. It was because classes that I was teaching. So I knew right then that here I was building this business, and a lot of it had to do with what I was doing and how I was performing and how I was teaching the agents to become better business people. And so that's where it turned into the business coaching, where they said, we don't want you to do classes as much anymore. We want you to do individual coaching. And I discouraged them from doing that. I said, you know, I still need to do the classes, because now I've got this pattern that my classes are the launch. Everywhere rushes the stage. I write down all the appointments, and then I have the appointments afterward, and where I would get into the more of the individual coaching or the team coaching with the individual brokerage teams. And I actually had, this company probably wouldn't be a bad thing to say, but it was Keller Williams. But I had every other real estate company in town coming to the classes, and they were paying Keller Williams to come to the classes.
Wow.
The classes were what they felt were not just inspirational, but action oriented, where their brokerages started getting so much better. Our agents went from, usually, you know, the average is around $1 million to $1.5 million a year per real estate agent. And our agents went from 1 to 1.5 million to 5 million to 10 million in a matter of a year and a half, probably 18 months, just by that coaching. So I knew again at that point that, wow, this isn't just a speaking career. This is a business coaching career. And it launched from, so then every real estate company in town wanted me. Then I was getting national keynotes through that same channel. And then I, right after that, I said, you know, maybe real estate is not just the only thing. And then the same thing happened with another large Fortune 500 company that had seen me someplace and said, wow, this is a great message. And we could, you know, transpose it into our business and let's see what we can do from there. And
what would you attribute the success of having people rushing to the stage during a talk and rushing to the stage to get appointments? What are some, we could probably talk all day about that, but what are some of the things that you did in order to get people to be so excited about wanting to get more, speak more, have more of what you had to offer?
Well, like I had said earlier, it's when I was doing the free speaking and I was going to some of these places to really test out the material. If I didn't have that same response in that room, I would keep doing that material. I would keep finding other places to do that material until I had that response. And I found that people really do want to know, they want to feel good, right? They want to have that emotional moment where they say, wow, this is something that I could certainly do. And they get a little boost of confidence. But what I found is that a lot of, even, you know, some of the people that, you know, name brands like Tony Robbins and some of the other, all of a sudden his name escapes me. It'll come back.
John Maxwell.
Right. And Brendan Bouchard. And, you know, they have great material and great things, but they really don't tell people how to get that startup that, you know, this is the first thing you do. And this is what, and then the next thing you do. And I think by adding that piece to it, that's what has been the success, is because people will spend thousands of dollars to come or to go to a program that they feel is going to make them feel good. And I certainly was one of those people that, you know, I went to these 4-day workshops and I came back like I was superwoman. You know, I came back with all of this energy and didn't know where to put it now, because I really didn't know what the first steps were.
Right.
I felt like they were trying to fix me. And in fixing me, that was great. They got this engine running really well, but then I had no place to go with the car. You know, I didn't know where to go from that point.
And like, I think that's such an important point, Ellen, because what I find a lot of the time is that, especially with coaches who are really passionate about what they're doing and helping people, sometimes they're a bit shy about moving people on to the next step and the next step. And what I tell people in my Speaking Fortunes class is that, you know, if you get people all heated up and you get them excited and motivated to do something, if you don't take them with you to that next step up your value ladder, it's kind of like working with a teenage boy, you know, and getting them all hot and bothered and saying, okay, ciao, bye.
Well, and you and I have talked too about the, and you call it I call it the funnel. I call it the funnel of where people want to go. And each client in each venue that you wind up, or that I feel anyway, I don't want to talk in generalities here. When I craft a proposal for someone, that I have that in my mind of, yes, I'm going to do this first speaking part and I'm going to do this keynote, but I'm going to put things in the keynote that are going to get people to move to action. At least they'll know the first three steps. After the third step, I know that they're going to come to me, because the first three steps are always going to work out because they're proven.
Right. Exactly.
As long as you do it, it works. The motivation and so forth. I encourage people to get accountability coaches. I encourage people to go and find their friends and make sure they know, like between 2 and 4 on a Sunday afternoon, don't call them because they're planning out their week. I teach them little tricks, like if you've got a busy household, put something, you know, wear a special shirt that they know that mom's working or wife is working and doesn't need to be bothered right now, or that, you know, has to stay focused for a period of time. I use a ball cap in my house So people know when I'm walking around my house with a ball cap, don't talk to me because I'm, you know, I'm processing, I'm thinking, I'm, you know, I'm being creative, I'm moving in that direction. So the accountability piece is another part of that action oriented thing that makes people run to the stage. And it is so nice. It's overwhelming, I got to tell you, in the first, if you're not prepared for it. And I certainly was not prepared for it the first couple of times that I did it.
And then I realized
by hiring an assistant for that particular day, and I only needed them for that 2-hour block right after the period ended, I would hire somebody locally. You know,
that's great.
It wasn't like I had to travel with somebody. I would just hire somebody that was there or get a referral from somebody that was there. And all they had to do was make appointments. That's all they had to do.
Great. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about speaking skills. Speakers are usually the most critical of other speakers. And what are some of the things that I know I have some very definite ideas that are different and to what most people think about when it comes to speaking or what's important. What are some of your pet peeves or distractions with a speaker? What are some of the things you don't like?
First is protocol. From a protocol standpoint, I don't like an empty front of the room where people aren't handing people off or handing speakers off to one another. I've been to several conferences where the stage has been empty, and for whatever reason that makes me nervous. It just completely makes me nervous. And I find from other people that protocol is really important of understanding how to work a stage. And you can get that from many different places. I personally got that from Toastmasters. That was something that I really learned. I don't know that I learned a lot of speaking skills necessarily from Toastmasters as much. I learned the protocol the best. And that was how to shake hands and introduce people and move through a fluid program. Some of the other pet peeves that I have, they were pet peeves because I saw myself on film.
That's hard.
Yeah. And then I adopted it. And then it was something that I know that I did. So it was hyper-focused on it when someone else did it. Like our president, our current president, and certainly other presidents have tapped on the lectern. You know, every time they're talking about something, they're tapping on the lectern and, you know, their college rings are hitting the side, very distracting for me. Also, the nervous tics that I have, like I said, I was a hair flipper. Every time I would start to get nervous or I would lose a line or I would forget where I was going with a certain topic, I would start like feverishly playing with my hair up on stage, which is so, so unprofessional. And like I said, once you see those things on film for yourself, those are some of the challenges that you have. But the other part, my pet peeve is that sometimes it sounds like people are not rehearsed and they're not practiced. And just like any other profession, if you are not taking time for yourself to learn how to improve every single day, I can't tell you how many times that I've stood up in front of audiences from audiences of 10 to audiences of 1,000 and 2,000 and 4,000. And it really, the message doesn't change. Just because I've done it a ton of times does not mean that I still don't need the practice. And there have been many times that I've paid for things and gone in and people seem very unorganized or not prepared for what they're about to present. Some of the stories don't make relevant transitions for me, those kinds of things. So I guess I have a lot of pet peeves, but it really boils down to, I can tell when someone is rehearsed and speaking from the heart at the same time, and when someone is kind of winging it. And I hear all too often now in the realm that I'm in, I hear people say, well, I'm just going to go wing it. And it's like a shrill goes up my spine, because I think to myself, and when people are paying for something and you're winging it, it just really, for lack of a better word, bastardizes all of us in the industry. Because then why would I go see this one? Because she's probably the same as the next. It's the same thing with business coaching in general. There are really good business coaches out there and that follow a really good formula and that they have a formula. That's probably the most important, is that they have a formula of what's been successful for them. but you know, the business coaches that are out there just sort of making people feel good. And I think they're more life coaches than they are business coaches. So those are some of the pet peeves.
I think that I have a different point of view, I think, than you do about some of these talks, because most of our speakers are going, they're speaking over a lunch meeting. And I think that it is important for them to have a really good structure and a transition and leading to wherever they want people to go. One of my pet peeves is when people get up in front of a room and all of a sudden they take on, it's like they take on another voice and they're not natural and flowing. So that's my biggest pet peeve. I really don't mind if people seem like they are, they know their topic really well, but they're getting information and they're transmitting, and it's more of a evolving kind of a talk or topic, as opposed to something that's really rehearsed. But that's just my own preference as far as style is concerned. The thing that that bugs me is, I know a few, I've been into some situations where somebody's talking and all of a sudden it's like, okay, let's get into this new character. And that always bugs me. You know, it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. What happened to Alan? You know, not saying that you would do that, but you know, it's like, what happened to that person, that really nice person that I met? Where did they disappear to?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And those are great points too. But again, with practice, when you use the Speaking Fortunes formula, like you've presented about going out and teaching, you know, going out and teaching or training or speaking, if you will, and just getting that rehearsal down, you can be a little more, you can be more fluid once you get it down, once you get the topics down and in the order and the flow of what you need to do it in. So I think we're probably saying a lot of the same thing. Just a different, just a different way of the way that we perceive it. Because it is a little bit of a challenge when you're, because of course, as you know, and maybe some of the listeners know, of course, too, but there's a big difference between speaking and training,
right?
And facilitating. And so you really have to know what your role is, in that particular venue. And even if it's these lunch and learns, a lunch and learn, you know, starts out with information, but then it should be some type of a training, and there's a different skill set involved with training and facilitating rather than just speaking.
Right.
And learning all of those skills, or learning the differences between those skills, can certainly be advantageous as well for again, future bookings.
Right.
ABWA, like for instance, that was one of the ones that I brought up. ABWA calls me all over the entire United States. I think somebody like passed out my name or something. So they want me to go to California to do a free lunch.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, I'm not going to make it to California to do a free lunch and learn, but I can certainly Skype you. I'll certainly do something for you on Skype if you have the technology to make that happen.
That's great. So tell me, you know, I do a lot of work with some of our speakers on, you know, looking to see what they, how we formulate. And I use the term value ladder because a lot of times people who are in like the healing arts and coaches and people who are, again, sort of these heart-centered people have a resistance to wanting to call a sales funnel a sales funnel. So that's how the value ladder came to be.
Sure, sure.
So sometimes, you know, the words that you use are important. But I think that it's very important that your topics be centered around where you're taking people. Tell me how you select your topics when you're out speaking to these various groups. How do you select the topics that you're going to speak about?
The first initial contact that I have with whatever organization it is, I ask them what their top three challenges are and why they're hiring me in the first place. Why is it something that they wanted me to do? So I get an idea of what it is. And typically they're sticking to the topics that they've heard me speak on before. I wrote a series of books called the Books of Business. And there's 16 and in the series. And they start with like mindset over matter and finding fans and manager or minion, because you have to decide in your business what you'd like to be. So a lot of times the topics or the speaking topics have evolved out of those books.
Great.
I wrote those books. It was a turbo writing moment. I wrote those 16 books in 16 weeks. And it was fast and furious, but it was one of those things that it was just pouring out of me. And same concept with the book. I did here's the information, here's the training part of it, and then here's a checklist. This is what you need to do first in each one of the books. So it was, it sort of followed along my speaking style. But it really goes back to what I said initially, was the challenges to picking the topics is identifying who your audience is and what challenges that they're having. And then I go right to the action items. I guess in all of my teaching and all of my writing, I consider myself a reverse engineer. So I start with the end result of what I want. And then how would I work my way back? How does it look working my way back? So I actually write most of my material backwards. I write it with the end. I worked for Stephen Covey for 10 years. So I think that that think with the end in mind, it really impacted my life.
And it's totally what we teach in the Speaking Fortunes is, right. What is, you know, first you look exact, it's a different, maybe how we get to the same thing, but it's first really looking to see who are your target audience, what do they really need, what are the problems they need to have solved, and then saying, okay, what do I have that I want to offer them? And then basically based on that, you get to formulate what your topic is, what your talk is. And you've got to start off with where you're going. And if you don't, that's when you run into speakers who, when they get to any kind of offer or whatever it is that they want at their close, it just seems odd, you know, it seems uncomfortable.
That awkward moment of, wow, yeah,
no.
That's all there is. Yeah, exactly. And that's where, you know, and again, your value ladder, my product funnel, the free speaking is always starts with that. And typically, then I get them on the website, and on my website, I don't have a lot of material that is, downloadable, but there certainly is enough information, whatever website I'm guiding them to, there certainly is enough information to get to the second point. And then the books are usually the next thing that people will buy, from me and still stay in touch and still, find out ways that they can connect with me. And then I do, much like what we're doing now, I'll do, interviews or, team training. I do a lot of that on Skype. I have international clients that I have a weekly Skype call with them and their team. And it's very exciting because now I get to learn some other countries' practices and culturally some differences in my style and the way that I do things versus the way that it would probably not work so well for them if they did it the way that I.
Great. So tell us, for those people listening who want to know a little bit about you, I think this would be a good place for you to tell them how they can visit your website or get a hold of you if they're interested in learning some more about what you do and possibly even working with you.
So I have a few websites. I have How to Start series, which is, it was the original name of the book, actually. So the how to start series.com has a lot of great information on there. Also how to buy the books and so forth. But I do a Google Hangout once a month. And that's always noted on the website. And it's just an open forum for people that to come in. It's not a speaking piece. But what happens is that people will type me questions and I just respond to the questions that, you know, I'll say, oh, this is from so-and-so and whatever area they're in, and then go from there. So that's really the first part is because I like people to get to know me. I like people to get to know my style. And then on businessresolutions.org, which is really more on the speaking side of things, where people book me for different speaking engagements and so forth, I have a contact me piece that will just pop up as soon as you go on the website. And that, once you type in any information there, it comes right to my phone. So I'm able to answer usually within 12 hours, depending, you know, of course, if I'm doing a speaking gig or you know, keynote someplace. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer, time changes and so forth. But for the most part, that's those are really the two big lead-ins for me as far as getting to work with me. I like to do, I've stepped a little bit away from individual coaching and gone more to team coaching because I've realized that even independent contractors need a accountability partner and somebody that can keep them straight. So I usually, if it's somebody that wants to do individual coaching, I usually ask that they bring somebody with them, like an assistant or somebody that's going to help them
stay
focused on that. Cause it's, you know, life gets in the way. It's
right.
All of a sudden, you know, my favorite thing to say when people say, oh, I got a million things to do today. I'm like, you know, if you write those things down, I bet you there's not a million. Kind of psyching yourself up there a little bit. You know, you don't have a million things to do. You probably have really three really important things to do, but you're going to get sidetracked with 997 other things like Facebook or, you know, something is going to take you off track. So really focus. Let's talk about the three things that you have to do today and not the million things you think you have to do today.
Right, exactly. So tell me a little bit, because you've been so successful marketing yourself, tell me a little bit about some of the things that you've learned about marketing and how you go about putting together a marketing plan. How do you, what can you share with our speakers in the few moments that we have left? Because that's something that you're so extraordinary at.
The thing, and I sort of have a unique approach to this because people will come to me and say, oh, well, I went to this marketing guru, genius, whatever, that said that I should be doing this and has this whole plan laid out. And the way I start, much like that reverse engineering concept that I was telling you before about how I design my speeches, is that I start out with asking people what they love to do. And the marketing is built around what they love to do already.
Right.
And for myself, I love to play music, and I learned the ukulele. I play little keyboards. I sing, and I started not that I'm hanging out in bars necessarily, because that's not necessarily what it is. But I started tapping into the music in the area, and honestly, some of my biggest clients right now are the people that I met through the music industry here locally.
Wow.
And I also got tapped into TMZ, which is that show online.
Mm-hmm.
So about four or five times a month, I'm on TMZ, you know, speaking about some kind of silly topic. You know, it's only like 2 minutes maybe, but it's just the simple fact that it's exposure, and I love to do it. I love that type of, you know, but like not the serious news,
right?
I like the unserious news. So I start people just like I've started myself. I start with people talking about what they love to do. And usually when they say that they like to help people, what kind of people do you like to help? Okay. Well, I like to help, you know, whatever they happen to say. And there's always an organization that has the same philanthropic ideas that whatever it is that you love. And that's when you get tapped in. Now, all of a sudden you're marketing with them, and then they have a brother or sister or cousin or somebody that's seen you, or they're taking pictures and they're putting them on Facebook. And that has been a little bit more, there's probably a little bit more follow-up on my part that I'm probably letting on to, because I do love it so much that I do it without even thinking. But the marketing uniqueness in my marketing plans, when I talk to people, it really keeps them happy, or at least that's been my success, or their success has been that while they're doing all of these things, it's not a grind. And I remember specifically in the real estate world, Gary Keller, who is the owner operator of Keller Williams, that the huge company, he's done a lot of research, and he wrote a book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And in that book was a yearly marketing calendar of what the agents were supposed to do. And a lot of it was involving phone calls. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen eye rolls and tears about having to make phone calls. And I would say, well, then, okay, what's the alternative? What do you want to do instead? And, oh, well, I want to, you know, in my case, I want to go play music and talk to people. And so that's exactly what I did. And when I'm having fun and I'm in that mode of having fun and being myself, you become more attractive to people. in general. So the ironic thing is that now when I travel, I bring my ukulele with me, and I always find some place in the city that will either let me busk on the street, you know, just kind of sit there with whatever, or go in and play with professional musicians. I mean, I've gotten business both ways. So
that's fantastic. I love that story. Well, Ellen, the next time I see you, I want to hear some ukulele.
I live in Brevard County in Florida, and because of all of this, now I've become not just a business coach, but now I'm a musician's business coach. And I just launched a website called brevardmusicbroker.com. And I have all of my people that I help start up event management planning or event catering management companies. There's been 15 of them, I believe, 15 or 16 of them. And now I'm connecting all this music business with these event planners. And now a whole nother business is sparked out of this. And all I'm doing is collecting checks.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
So you never know where the Free Speakers Bureau and the Speakers is going to take you.
That is absolutely outstanding. Ellen, you've been a fantastic guest. Can you just remind our listeners again how, if they want to know more about you, be in contact, get your book, what is your website again? How can they get a hold of you?
Businessresolutions.org.
Businessresolutions.org. Ellen O'Neill Little.
Yes. And also howtostartseries.com.
Howtostartseries.com. All right. Fantastic.
Little Bits of Business are on Amazon.com. You can order those right there online. And I also have a Monday afternoon radio show on 1060 WMEL. It's primarily the East Coast of Florida. It reaches to Jacksonville, to West Palm, and to Orlando.
Fantastic. Ellen, you've been a fantastic guest, and I look forward to having you back next time. Maybe we'll talk about strategies for getting people to rush you on stage at the end of your talk.
Amen.
Because you're so great at that. Huh? Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And thank you so much for all the support and for offering the freespeakersbureau.com. It's a wonderful website, and I hope all of the listeners really tap into all of the resources and things that you have as well.
Thank you so much, Ellen. You've been a wonderful guest. Have a beautiful day. And thank you to all our listeners. You've been listening to Ellen O'Neill Little and the Free Speaker Bureau Speaker Series podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you on the inside. Goodbye.